a series called You Are Accepted. And I love it because it's so basic, but it's also very beautiful. No matter who you are, no matter what your past is, what your future might look like, you are accepted. And it's so much more than just saying you're loved, because we hear that a lot in sermons, you are loved, and it's true. But acceptance has a sense of belonging. There's a sense of connectedness. You are accepted just as you are. You're accepted into this community. You're accepted under Christ. And since we don't like to accept that we are accepted without stipulations, because we're human, we have this series to kind of clear up some of those buts. You are accepted, but what about this, that, and the other? What about my desires? Last week, what about my doubts? And today, what about my shame? And our reading this week is one you might be familiar with, and maybe you've heard it a million times, and feel like you've gained everything there is to gain out of it. But we're still going to look at it again. Jesus and his disciples, they make a deliberate choice to go through Samaria on their way to Galilee. They could have chosen a couple different routes, one maybe a little more scenic through the Jordan Valley. They could have avoided Samaria altogether, and it's a region known not to be too friendly with the Jews. And maybe you've heard the story of the Good Samaritan. It's ironic because Samaritans weren't technically, like, they weren't known as being good, and so when you have the Good Samaritan, it was a little catchy. But yet they're on this particular path through Samaria. And as the disciples head into town to get some food, Jesus approaches a well. He finds a woman alone, and he asks her to give him a drink. Jesus is tired, he's thirsty, and he doesn't have a bucket for this well. And we look at the story and we're like, well, why was the woman alone at the well? I mean, wouldn't all the women, I mean, we know this now, women like to do everything together. They go to the bathroom together. They do this and that. So why then as well? Why wouldn't she have gone with everyone else? Wouldn't it have made more sense to go in the morning or in the evening and not during the hottest part of the day? And so we like to read it and say, well, did she go there alone to avoid the other women? But maybe it was just a convenient time for her. I kind of like to think maybe she was an introvert and she was like, I don't want to deal with them, so I'm going to go by myself. We don't know, but we like to read into it that there's something not quite right about this. And as I've studied this passage and heard messages about it, I admit, I always like to judge the woman right off the bat. I feel like she's got three strikes against her. She's a woman, she's a Samaritan, and for whatever reason, she's alone at the well. And that could be perceived as her being ostracized from her community. And this makes sense because of what we've heard about the Samaritans, the foreigners, and how in the early first century, how women were treated, the differences between Jews and Samaritans, the difference between men and women, and how they would interact. The three strikes against this woman make sense. It seems odd that Jesus would approach this woman in this way, in this particular place, but let's think for a moment, not from the woman's perspective, but from Jesus' perspective. He chose to go on this path through Samaria to Galilee. He's here on purpose. He's the foreigner in this story. He is a Jew in Samaria, and he is at the well without a bucket. He's the outsider, and he's tired and he's thirsty. We see Jesus as vulnerable in this story. Sometimes reaching out to other people means being vulnerable. Being vulnerable sucks. I don't know if that's been your experience, but I don't really like it. But sometimes reaching out to others means being vulnerable. It looks like purposely going out of our way to encounter another. It looks like putting our comfort aside for the sake of reaching out to someone else. The story continues with a discussion between the woman and Jesus, and the story becomes about life-giving water that only comes from one source. But then, seemingly out of nowhere, Jesus asks this woman to go get her husband. What? The woman replies, I don't have a husband. Jesus continues by telling her own story. You're right. You've been married 5 times, and the man you're living with now isn't your husband. Whoa, Jesus, what's this all about? When we read this, it can kind of sound like Jesus is shaming her. You've had 5 husbands, and the guy you're with now isn't even your husband. Calling her out on her past. But I think we're looking at it from a Western civilization, American mindset. Like, if this scene were to take place today, out at the gazebo on Main Street, we'd all be shocked. We'd be like, whoa, what's happening? We'd feel bad for the woman. We'd probably be angry at Jesus. But this isn't like that. There could be lots of reasons for her to have had 5 husbands, and none of which could point to her own immorality or to shaming her. She could have been a widow. She could have married at a very young age to an older man for the benefit of her family. Maybe there was a divorce or two, but Jesus doesn't call her out on her wrongdoing or sin. He just tells her story. And the man she's with now, maybe they were too poor to get married officially, and they just lived together. Everyone has a story, and our stories can be really complicated. One thing I like to do with kids is when I first meet them or starting to get to know them, I have them draw out their family tree. And you get to see kind of those stray relatives that have come in the picture or in and out of the picture, on how many people are connected to the kid and what their situation looks like. And it's just helpful to see who they're influenced by and catch a glimpse of how their life has been shaped so far. And I'm sure if I asked each of you to draw your family trees, they would be a lot more complicated. Maybe have some scribbles over here and some white out over there. A few angry faces, a few sad faces on the sides. We each have our own story, and this woman's no different. We only get part of her story, but what we also get is how Jesus reacted to her story. He knew it. He knew her story. And unlike another story in John, the story of the woman caught in adultery, Jesus doesn't tell this woman to go and sin no more. We don't know what all her past is included, and we can't judge her. But what we do know is that she was noticed. She was known. And she was loved by God. I think that's something that we as humans struggle with. Sometimes we don't feel noticed by God. Sometimes we don't feel known by God. And then we think, if God really knew me, all of me, my whole story, would God still love me? Jesus and this woman continue their theological discussion at the well. They talk about where true worship takes place. There will be a time when it doesn't matter where you worship God. And through the Jews, the whole world will receive salvation. She's hearing the gospel message, the good news. We worship God in spirit and in truth. And Jesus reveals himself to this woman. She says she knows that the Messiah will come, and he's the one we'll call Christ. And when he comes, he'll explain everything to us. And Jesus replies, I'm that one. I'm speaking to you right now. Jesus reveals himself to this woman. And what's her response? Meh, okay. No, she goes and tells everybody. Sometimes it's hard for us because shame makes us hide. It pushes us into the darkness and it tells us to be quiet. Shame makes us fear. What if somebody finds out about this or that about me? But when we encounter the life-giving waters that God offers us, the truth and light is revealed. Shame tells us that we don't matter, that we're limited by our abilities, by our past, by our present, that we aren't good enough. Shame makes us live out of a place of doubt, of feeling unaccepted, unwanted, and that our gifts and talents aren't useful, necessary, or helpful. Whatever the woman was dealing with in her life, it didn't matter. She ran and told everyone. This man has told me everything I've ever done. Obviously, this lady feels accepted and loved by Jesus. She probably wouldn't have run off and said to others, she probably wouldn't have said, hey, guys, look, I've been judged. You guys want to come meet my accuser? He made me feel really bad about myself. You want to come meet him? No, she obviously feels accepted and loved as she goes and tells the others to come see Jesus. Through this story, Jesus shows us that we are seen, that we are known and loved. Jesus talked to the woman. He noticed her. He approached her. And he offered fresh and living water. He knew her story. God revealed to her. When we know we are accepted, we want to include other people. We want to share what we've encountered, what we've discovered. We want to tell our stories. And we not only need to tell our stories, but we also need to be the people that can receive stories, to listen to the stories of others. And that's why we gather here, right? We're here to encourage one another. We're here to, we show up, we listen, we care for one another, and we go to places that are uncomfortable. We're vulnerable with one another. And we don't let shame prevent us from receiving the grace that God offers. This woman received the grace. No matter what her story was about, she received God's grace. And I'd hope that for our community, we would be a community of people who know they are accepted, who know they are seen and noticed by God and loved by God, and that we would be able to accept others. I'm going to end with a prayer from my favorite theologian, Walter Brueggemann. He has this book called Prayers for a Privileged People, and it came out a few years ago, and I just love everything about it. It actually came out almost 10 years ago. There's even like a prayer for Super Bowl Sunday in here, so I'm not going to read that one because that's not the Sunday. But I'm going to read a poem, a prayer called Exposed to Mercy, Truth, and Newness, and this will be our closing prayer. Pray with me. We begin the new week toward you, from whom no secret can be hid. We have had a night and a weekend and a lifetime of secrets. We have stored the usual list of secrets, of acres of guilt unforgiven, of desires too rich to utter. Beyond that, we have a secret list of hurts, from ancient days with parents and siblings, from assorted bullies at play school and in adult life. Some of us are overly sensitive, all of us grown protective, incapable of self-pity. Beyond that, we have a secret list of hopes, some selfish and some noble. Hopes of new freedom and new reconciliation, of new security and new recognition, of doing well and being well. We have so much to keep hidden, and you know. You know because you made us and have watched us from the beginning. You know because you see us in our waking and our sleeping. You know because you love us right through, beyond all our covert capacity. And we yearn to be known fully, without reserve, by you. So we ask on this day courage to match your love, honesty to match your generosity, self-awareness to speak into your awareness of us, that by the time the sun sets, we will have rent the curtain of our lives and let you into the center of it all, there to abide in holy forgiveness. We pray through your Spirit of all truth that our truth open to your mercy may make us free. Amen.